I'm Bobby Likas, and I'm proud to be a part and play a part of the Ethanol Mythbusters. For 41 years, I've been in the automotive service industry. I currently own and operate a 15,000 square foot bumper-to-bumper automotive full service shop that's located on the Gulf Coast of Florida, Pensacola, Florida. I've built rear engine dragster engines. I have been a member of the National Advisory Council for NAPA, as well as local automotive service technician training programs with Pensacola Junior College. I've also built a network, car clinic network, and for 21 years, we have created and self-syndicated, and it's America's largest car talk program on commercial radio with studios located directly inside our service shop. I've answered more than 100,000 car questions live on air without the aid of computers or prompts, and I've delivered, sent, and promoted ASA shop members for those past 21 years. So when anyone needs information and a qualified service shop, I promote the ASA service member. And on behalf of my colleagues, who I'll introduce in just a moment, I want to introduce the Mythbusters. What we plan to do and will do for you is we'll demythify at least three common myths with regarding to ethanol, and then we'll open the floor up to a robust Q&A so that you'll have your opportunity at the mic and ask questions that I know that you're going to have a burning desire to do so. I'll share this with you before we get started. The Ethanol Mythbusters session goes directly to NATEF's mission, communication between the OEM and the technician. And with the CAFE mandate, supported by Ford, GM, Chevy, the list goes on. I won't take your time and give you the list of all the car makers, except to say that the group represents 90%+ of all new cars made in the United States. They are supporting the CAFE mandate. And that CAFE mandate simply says that by 2025, our cars that we drive on the street will average 54.5 miles per gallon with a CAFE fleet average. And so the Ethanol Mythbuster session will proactively arm those of you who are technicians. I'd like to see a hand, if you're a technician, and I'd like to see, or a shop owner, would you hold your hand up, please? Fantastic. I know you'll have questions, and I know that you have customers that have questions about ethanol. So this session will help you to better communicate with your car owners so that you'll have information about ethanol and the assets that it can bring to automobiles, and to also communicate, help you communicate with the OEMs who are going to build engines that will meet the requirements, including downsizing, when Dr. Vent will speak to that, downsizing, but not to lose any power or performance. So with that, I'm going to introduce Dr. Matty Vent. Dr. Matty Vent is going to present to you the EBDI engine. And in just a brief history, this event started when I saw the EBDI, Extreme Boost Direct Injection engine, which is a 3.2 V6 gasoline engine that rivals the performance both in horsepower and torque of a 7-liter, 6.4-liter diesel engine, which is unbelievable when I first heard that. Dr. Vent will speak specifically on Ricardo's EBDI engine. And joining us also is Kelly Davis, who is the Director of Regulatory Affairs for the Renewable Fuels Association. And Kelly brings some 30 years in the petroleum industry. She's an active member of the ASTM Committee for Petroleum Products and a past chair of the Technical Committee for the Renewable Fuels Association. Dr. Vent holds 12 patents. He is SAE Chairman for Powertrain Control Strategies and Sessions. He's involved in the development of numerous powertrain control strategies, and he's going to share with us information, in-depth information, about the EBDI engine. And with that, would you please welcome Dr. Matty Vent.
Thanks, buddy. This is good. That works, does it? Okay. Yeah, thanks, Bobby. Excellent introduction and summary. Welcome, all of you. I'm very pleased to be here today. My name's Matty Vent. I'm a Chief Engineer for Powertrain Controls at Ricardo. Now, for those of you who don't know what Ricardo is, we're a sort of engineering service provider developing innovative products and technologies for the automotive industry. I'm actually working in Detroit at a technical office there.
We are a global organisation. We've been around for about 100 years. We work with a lot of the OEMs, tier ones, the government organisations, even the military in the UK and in the US. We work on things from motorcycles through passenger vehicles, light duty trucks, heavy duty trucks, and so on. We're sort of like the silent partner behind some of these OEMs and tier one suppliers. However, if you're fortunate enough to have driven, say, a Bugatti Veyron, you know, the world's fastest production car, that DCT transmission in that was designed by Ricardo and manufactured by Ricardo. So, now my presentation today is really to address this myth one, which is ethanol ruins engine performance. Okay, it's true that ethanol does have less energy content per gallon than gasoline. If you look at the table over here, you'll see as you increase the amount of ethanol in the blend, the amount of energy does decrease. And in fact, E10 has about 3% less energy than straight gasoline. E85 has about 20% less energy than gasoline. Now, energy density of fuel is important as it does impact fuel economy and range of the vehicle. However, if you look at the column on the right-hand side there, you'll see that under real live testing of vehicles in the field, if you look at, say, an E10, the vehicles average about 1.4% less in fuel economy, not the 3% you'd expect based on the energy content. That's to say that the fuel economy of ethanol blends is not directly proportional to the energy content. Now, why is this? Well, there's positive beneficial properties of ethanol that, if exploited, can assist improve the fuel economy of the vehicle. Just as a reality check, there's other factors such as driver behaviour and tyre pressure that have a bigger impact on miles per gallon. But these are what I'd call more sort of destructive type impacts. The ethanol, yes, it does reduce the fuel economy, but if it's cheaper in the end, if it's the dollars per mile travel is lower, again, consumers better off. And I think all of us would be happy to send our money to the local farmers here as opposed to sending it off to some sheiks in the Middle East. Okay, so the good news is that ethanol has other benefits like high octane. Now, the octane rating, I think you're all very familiar with that, but it's just a measure of the anti-knock properties of the fuel. So the higher the octane, the higher the cylinder pressure you can operate without causing destructive damage to the engine. So high octane is good for extracting the maximum performance from the engine and also improving the efficiency. So if you look at E10 fuel, it's blended to an 87 AKI, or anti-knock index, which is the pump rating. Now, premium fuel is 93 octane. If you look at E85, it has 99 anti-knock index. Now, a lot of the E85 cars out there are really cars that are designed to run on gasoline, and by the way, they're compatible with E85. What we're talking about here is let's design engines that use that high octane property of the fuel and exploit that to get the best efficiency and the best power density out of the engines. Ethanol also has a higher latent heat of vaporization, which means when you inject it directly into the cylinder, it has a major cooling effect, much better than gasoline. So it absorbs a lot of the heat. There's two benefits from that. One is that the cooling effect allows you to push more air into the cylinder, which means more torque, right? And the other one is that cooling the cylinder also reduces the tendency to knock, which means you can push your engines harder and provide even more performance from those engines. There's also some other benefits of ethanol. It does actually burn faster, which improves the thermal efficiency, or the efficiency of converting chemical energy of fuel into mechanical power, and also burns cooler than gasoline, providing you're keeping the same air-fuel ratio. It's also a renewable resource and therefore important for national security. Now, the most difficult thing for the automotive industry, well, the biggest challenges have come through regulations dictated by the government, primarily NHTSA and EPA, and also ARB, if you're in California. Now, there's been some new requirements brought in which really affect the amount of CO2 generated, which is like a greenhouse gas emissions, and also there's some CAFE requirements now where all the manufacturers are required to meet certain fuel economy targets by 2025. Now, if you look here, we actually see the glide path between now up until 2025. So the manufacturers are currently need to meet about 27.3 miles per gallon. That's the average of trucks and passenger vehicles. But by 2025, they've got to reach 54.5 miles per gallon. That's doubling the fuel economy. So that's quite a big stretch. If you think about it, it's a very short time period, and there's only sort of 2 to 3 model changes within that period. So how are we going to get there? Obviously, there's a lot of vehicle electrification to be done. So you'll see a higher proportion of hybrid and electric type vehicles out there. But the conventional engine will still be used in these hybrids as well as in non-hybrid vehicles. So the engine is to stay around for quite a while. So it's important that we address the efficiency of these engines. So future engines will have a natural thirst for higher octane number just to improve the efficiency. Now why? Well, if we start, we have fuel with a certain energy content, whether it's ethanol or ethanol blend. By maximising the efficiency, we can achieve these mandated fuel economy targets. What impacts this efficiency really is a function of several factors, one being engine design, another vehicle design, obviously drive cycle, the type of cycles you're on, the vehicle behaviour, and environmental. Today we're only going to really discuss engine design. Now, with engine design, the fuel properties have a major impact on the overall performance of the engine. So we can exploit the fuel properties through engine design to improve the overall efficiency of engines. Now, historically, most vehicles have been port fuel injected, naturally aspirated. But as you know, over recent years, there's been a tendency to start introducing more direct injection, naturally aspirated engines. We've actually gone through 3 levels of, I'd say, generations of GDI type technologies. We've gone from directing the spray off the piston to directing the spray off the cylinder wall, and the latest is really spray guided, where you're controlling the spray around the spark plug and using multiple injections of varying duration and variable spacing to improve the efficiency. Of course, Atkinson cycle engines are becoming more prevalent these days, mainly in hybrids. They provide a bigger expansion ratio and to extract that little bit more energy out of the cycle. Then, of course, we're still using port fuel injection, but putting turbochargers or superchargers on these vehicles or engines, sometimes combination of both using series sequential type boosting arrangements. And then finally, we've got a combination of both direct injection and boosting. Now, direct injection is really the fuel path handling, and the boosting is the air path handling. Both those type of technologies benefit from the properties of ethanol or high octane fuels, as well as the high latent heat of vaporization. Now, within this direct injection boosted group, there's actually 3 major categories. One is DI boosted with enrichment. By that I mean the vehicle's running stoichiometric air fuel ratio, but it has to run rich at high loads. So if you're really pushing the engines harder, obviously you're going to reach these points where you've got to put in extra fuel to avoid overheating exhaust valves and after-treatment components. But that has a major impact on emissions, of course, the hydrocarbons, and a slight impact on fuel economy. The next area is DI boosted without any enrichment, which means you're running stoichiometric air-fuel ratio across the entire speed torque range for the engine. Now, that actually is made possible by using ethanol, because it does burn cooler. On our test on the dynamometer, we were running about 100 degrees C cooler on exhaust gas temps at high loads. And the final area really is direct injection boosted, but running lean. That could be homogeneous lean or stratified charge lean. Now, the Ricardo's EBDI demonstrator vehicle really looks at both of these technologies. So it goes from zero, like E0, or straight gasoline, up to E85. So what is EBDI? It stands for Extreme Boosted Direct Injection. Again, it is a Ricardo technology demonstrator, so it really is an R&D project. If you've been downstairs and seen the exhibit, you'll see what we're talking about. But it is not production intent yet, but the concepts and principles can be applied to future production engines. So EBDI is an example of extreme downsizing. In this case, for that demonstrator, we actually chose a GMC Sierra, so it's an 8,000-pound truck. Typically has a 6.6 or 7-litre diesel, I think a 6.6-litre gasoline engine as well. So what we did was we developed a 3.2-litre spark ignition engine. We used the GM high-feature V6 because Ricardo helped General Motors design that engine. So we knew that engine very well. So we used that as our starting point. We modified that engine. We included boost systems, EGR, direct injection, and such. And we provided the performance of a 6 to 7 litre diesel by utilising the high octane properties of E85. Yet we also made it compatible right down to E0 fuel. That provided a number of fuel economy benefits. And even though we were targeting a light duty truck, these benefits, well, this sort of technology could be used on passenger vehicles, you know, trucks, medium-duty vehicles, as well as off-road applications. We're sort of targeting an engine that would behave like a diesel, but still be spark ignition, because diesel engines these days have a high cost penalty because of the after-treatment systems. You need to have your particulate matter filter, so DPF, for the soot. You need to have either an LNT or an SCR with your rear injection to reduce the NOx, as well as a DOC. So it's a very high cost after treatment system. With our system, we still run stoichiometric, so we use the conventional three-way catalyst, which is a lot cheaper. And again, there's obviously a lot of areas the this sort of engine technology can be used, and it's quite scalable. So now we look at the actual fuel economy. So shown on here, on the left axis, we'll see that there's the actual fuel economy. We just looked at three cycles, FTP 75, which is sort of an urban city cycle. Then we have US06, which is a very aggressive drive cycle, and there's a highway cycle. Now, for the urban city cycle, we actually achieved 26.5% better fuel economy with EBDI engine compared to the gasoline, and 3.5% better than the diesel. So we're saying we're getting equivalent fuel efficiency to the diesel by extreme boosting. If you start looking at the performance, we have the engine torque and speed. And we'll see that the curve in the bottom is the standard gasoline engine used for this Sierra truck with a peak torque of about 550 newton meters. And then there are two diesel variants which provided lower RPM but higher torque. If you look at the green curve here, you'll see this is the EBDI engine running on E85. So this 3.2 litre produced as much torque as a 6.6 and 7 litre engine. Although at a slightly higher RPM range, lower than a standard gasoline, so it was designed more to behave closer to being a diesel. So it's more low revving, but not quite as low as a diesel, but a very wide operating speed range. So again, the EBDI approach using high octane fuels such as ethanol is a scalable technology for different vehicles and markets. And the myth that ethanol ruins engine performance is busted. High octane properties of ethanol can be leveraged to significantly improve engine performance. And again, I guess Ricardo, we've been involved for a number of years on the design side. Now we'd like to talk about the actual service and maintenance side. And it's my pleasure to invite Bobby Likas back again. There's no better person I'd like to discuss on this topic than Bobby. Bobby.
Thank you, Dr. Van. The second myth is the ethanol poses repair and service problems. And I would like to share with you that the then would be in the mid-70s when gasohol first came on the scene and the oil embargoes, the days of the gas lines. What we saw in our service shop were cars that had carburetors that either ran fairly well, the engines ran fairly well, but they hesitated or they stumbled. And of course, we would go through the fuel systems and update the fuel systems, and we would correct those problems. And the irony of each one of the carburetor kits, if you will, that we bought would have at least 2 to 5 small packages of updated and upgraded synthetic rubber parts, like accelerator pumps, nitrile rubber, and those particular parts that might have been affected. But for the most part, what I saw was some cleaning out of fuel tanks from the gasohol, and of course, whatever was in the tanks would end up in the carburetor. So business was really great. But what I also remember was that the cars that we fixed and we went through the fuel systems in that day then stayed fixed. I think it's ironic when I hear, and unbelievable when I hear people say that ethanol ruins engines. For those of you in the business, you know as well as I that people ruin engines, not ethanol ruins engines. So with regard to the then, I would also say if those of you in this room that might have to have a loved one, a surgery or open heart surgery, or perhaps shoulder surgery as I've had recently, would you elect to go to a 70s operating room using 70s technologies and a 70s state of that year, that era doctor? And I would say not. So it's always amazing at the now and the then. I want to look at the then and go into the word now. When I think of now, I think of just this past week where Ford and GM had approved the use of E15, Ford for the 13 model years and some of their units, and then GM for the 2012 model units for E15. And so that's a good place to start for now. But we know that there are better fuel systems, there are better injection systems, as Dr. Vent alluded to, that are already the DI systems that are on the street and are producing better gas mileage. A prime example would be Ford's EcoBoost. And consumers are paying a premium for EcoBoost, and they're actually removing or ordering a higher percentage of, in fact, 41% of the F-150 trucks are EcoBoost engines, and Ford's designed that engine to go across its entire line. In fact, in Stuttgart, Germany, they have an international award of the year for the engine, and Ford won that with its first ever three-cylinder engine. Imagine that Ford Motor Company would design and create its own three-cylinder engine. And I just want to read to you Dean Slavnich, who is the editor and also part of that particular magazine, the Engine of the Year award winner, and I quote, that the small engine capacity continues to impress the most in overall terms, even against the larger, higher performance engines, says a great deal about how the automotive industry has developed in recent years, end quote. And so for more than 30 years, that's back in the beginnings of the 80s, engines have been designed to run on E10. So the question that I would pose is why all of a sudden is there a challenge with ethanol in the fuel when the engines were designed for E10 30 years ago, three decades ago? And I would also share with you that in the 41 years I've been in the automotive service business, I nor any of my technicians have we ever had a single engine to fail as a result of ethanol. And for those of you in the business, I would ask that same question. The future. The future is here. It's today. It's in your hands and either in your head or at your fingertips. There's more information available than ever before in the history of mankind. And to suggest that manufacturers like Ford and GM and Chrysler and all the OEMs would not use higher technologies like the Ricardo developments of its engine is ludicrous. And to suggest that they would just sit idly by and not take the actions to beat the 54.5 CAFE mandate is just not acceptable as well. What I have found and my admiration for Ricardo is that Ricardo brings not only the design that Dr. Vent shared with us with regard to using the properties of ethanol, building engines specifically to develop the power from the smaller end that allows smaller engines to do the same work with increased MPG, but the ethanol as a high octane gasoline additive is an enabler of that certain technology. And Ricardo brings a partner of choice both for the OEM, as Dr. Vent said, and for the automotive aftermarket. Meanwhile, I suggest that we as automotive technicians, and for those of you in this room that are influencers in the automotive technicians, and I heard John earlier mention that you need to reach the numbers and increase the number of members for NESTEF, as does ASA, as does our complete line of automotive technicians. And so to increase that number, it takes education, it takes something that brings to them a desire to want to be a part of our industry. And so the new engines of the future will be the OEM engines that are smaller, are more compact, have higher compression, and ethanol will enable the use of those engines. E15 has been approved. It's not mandated that you use it, but it's approved and it's at the pump. And Kelly Davis from the Renewable Fuels Association is going to join me next on the podium, and she's going to share with you some pretty good information about the ethanol as a fuel. Meanwhile, I would suggest that we as industry spokesmen, we as service shop owners and technicians, not sit idly by, and not as we did historically, wait until the cars get out of warranty before we work on or know about those automobiles. And that's what this session's about, is what we communicate to our customers, that we know not only what is under their hood today, but what's coming down the pike in 5 years, or three drive cycles, or three generations, as Dr. Vint referred to. So we can make a difference, and I believe that it's time that we did. So the ethanol poses repair and service problems. For more than 30 years, engines have been designed to run on E10, and today's engines are, and future engines will be, designed to optimize various blends of ethanol. Ethanol myth number 3, consumers don't want choices at the pump. I'd like for you to welcome Kelly Davis from the Renewable Fuels Association. Kelly has joined us to offer her information. So let's please welcome Kelly Davis from the Renewable Fuels Association.
Thank you, Kelly. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Bobby. It's great to be here. It's been great to be at the CARS Conference. Not a normal venue for the Renewable Fuels Association to be here. A little bit about the RFA. We are a .org as well. We represent domestic producer members of ethanol in the country, and we focus on outreach, education, technical safety, the same things that you guys have within your organization. So let's look at this. We hear this. Consumers don't want choice at the pump. Well, our polling data shows consumers do want choices at the pump. A recent survey completed by American Viewpoint showed 61% said they were in favor of replacing our imported fossil fuel dependency with renewable fuels like ethanol. Ethanol delivers options for all engines. Like Bobby said, since 1980, all cars and light-duty trucks and engines have all been approved for E10. In fact, ethanol is in over 95% of the nation's gasoline supply today. It's just innocuous. All of you filled up on E10 driving here. Since June of this year, model year cars and trucks 2001 and newer are all approved for 15% ethanol content, and you'll start seeing the Nomer E15 out in the marketplace. Millions of flexible fuel vehicles, we call them FFVs for short, are on the road, and auto manufacturers continue to offer more and more models. These FFVs are capable of using ethanol contents up to 83%. As consumers, we all naturally want to spend less money, and ethanol has been saving consumers money. A university study showed domestically produced ethanol decreased the average wholesale cost of gasoline by $1.09 in 2011. Wow, that's a lot of money. And just last week, a single refinery problem caused a gasoline price hike of 30 cents a gallon overnight. I'm sure you guys woke up to the news like I did. And if our pumps had more options, these temporary fuel supply situations could easily be managed with increased ethanol content to help temper the price spikes that like these that we'll see. Let's be clear. There is no cheaper or less toxic octane enhancer on the market than ethanol. In fact, taking advantage of the U.S. refined renewable octane, it will be building on the future of cars, as we just witnessed with Ricardo's presentation. We also know that consumers want choice because we track these fuel sales at the pump. And anytime we've offered more options at the pump, the tracking shows that they will choose them. You guys are probably wondering really what ethanol is doing at your event. And as a coordinated misinformation campaign against ethanol comes from our detractors. You see it every day. We feel this is a good place to counter negative misinformation is with the automotive service technicians. As Americans, we've always loved our cars, and we trust you guys to take good care of them. So we want to educate you on what we know about ethanol's performance and give you facts, not hype, and not information to protect market share. I've been in the ethanol business for over 30 years after working at a large refinery complex. In those 30 years, I've seen ethanol have these same consumer myths over the whole 30 years. And in that 30 years, we have driven millions and millions of personal miles on E10. It's kind of innocuous in the gasoline supply. And so the consumers have real-world testing on these millions of miles. We recently also completed the largest fuel testing study ever approved by the EPA. It was 3 to 4 years long. The Department of Energy conducted 6 million miles of testing on E15. That's equivalent to 12 round trips to the moon in your car. EPA found no issues and stated E15 is perfectly safe and effective for approved engines. The RFA is working diligently currently, as in what we're doing here. We need the outreach programs, but we're also working with the petroleum industry, gasoline retailers, automakers, as well as consumers to ensure that E15 is used properly. The more fun side of the research that we all get to have has been happening on the racing circuits, and I'm sure you've heard the Indy League, NASCAR, American Le Mans, and NHRA have all switched to ethanol or ethanol blends and have had positive experiences to tell. In July of this year, in Kansas, we had our first station in the nation open offering E15 for sale. He wanted to be different, and he wanted to support his local economy. He is a true trailblazer. He's a hero for our industry. A second station followed, and recently a third has followed. There will be more. So, myth number three, consumers don't want choice, it's busted. Consumers do want choices at the pump. American consumers are looking for choices when it comes to fueling their vehicles, and they now have another more domestic, renewable fuel option with E15 becoming more commercially available. Ethanol's here to stay and will be part of our more secure fueling future. Thanks.
Thank you, Kelly. Thank you very much.